Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk leader.
All right, we made it to Thursday. You might hear a little bit of a roughness to my voice. I have done a lot of base. I think I've done 9 games in 3 days, so I'm a little rough. I sound like Rod Stewart or Michael Bolton or somebody like that. But Chris Daly is here with me on Mayor Thursday here on the Andy Griffin Show. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Doing well. Good morning, Andy. Good morning, everyone.
Appreciate you coming. Yeah, it's the third Thursday. Chris is usually the second Thursday of the month for anybody that's keeping track, but he had some commitments last week. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, thank you to Mayor Billings for trading me weeks. My daughter's a senior softball player, and the Crimson Cliffs Mustangs traveled to Logan for the Super Regionals. Unfortunately, needed 2 wins and only got 1, so her season and our season ended, but super proud. It was a great season, and it's hard when your kids finish a sport or an activity that they've been doing for so many years. Life is just like that. Sometimes things change, things end.
Kind of a time of reflection, right? You go, okay, well, man, I remember when she first swung a bat, and I taught her how to throw. And
you know, it was the little Pee Wee League at Washington with the silver and maroon reversibles, and a little team sponsored hat, and it just. It goes by too quick, and she's a pretty stoic girl, but just kind of watching her emotion, you know, realizing that that was maybe her last time playing. It was hard also for Dad to watch.
Yeah, I'm sure some tears were shed, and especially, you know, to go out on the losing end. And I see, even with guys, you know, you after giving everything you have to get to a certain level, and it was sad yesterday. Desert Hills and Dixie both got knocked out of the state tournament in baseball, and you know, these are 18-year-old boys who aren't supposed to cry. You don't cry when you're an 18-year-old boy, but some of them just couldn't hold back the emotions of having their career end.
Yeah,
you know, so. Tough deal. Chris wanted to tell you about it. So your daughter, softball player.
Yes.
Dixie has a player on their team, a girl on their baseball team. Her name is Jordan Andreas, and she pitched. So you think, okay, maybe token girl, it's politically cool, you know, you look cool, and you'll put her in a garbage thing. Jordan came in, day before yesterday, in a 5-5 game and pitched 2 innings. I think she allowed 1 run in 2 innings. Her curveball was unbelievable. And I was like, does she play softball? Because obviously she was on the softball team, but she was a very, very good player for Dixie High. I'd never seen that.
No, me neither. I had no idea. That's amazing.
Yeah, so it's kind of cool. So I don't know. Maybe your daughter should look into baseball now. For a little while. Who knows? I don't know. Can she throw the curveball?
No, she kind of her thing is she's a shortstop, but leadoff batter, slapper, and
speedster. Yeah.
And she, in fact, I tried to give her some consolation last night. I hadn't looked at the stats all year. I said, look, she's a senior. Let's just have fun. But a couple of people were telling me, and so she actually tied with a good friend of hers that plays for Hurricane for the most stolen bases in 4A. So
really?
I tried to give her some consolation. Hey, you went out with, you know, accomplished something there. And
that's cool.
Who knows? I said, I tried to convince her. I said, hey, why don't you just go and try to walk on at BYU as a, you know, pinch runner or something, you know? And
yeah.
I'm trying to just kind of plant that seed. We'll see. She's really, really quick and fast and just kind of has that natural ability to get the right jump as the pitch is let go. And then, just really fluid and in the way that she slides into that base and pops up. So I don't know. She probably won't, but you know, dads can dream a little bit.
Absolutely. Did you play baseball back in the day?
I wasn't great, but I loved baseball. Played it up through kind of freshman, maybe sophomore year in Pine View. And
if you'd have stayed around, they probably would have used you as a speed up runner or a pinch runner.
Yeah. I mean, I played a little second base and I was okay, but there were guys that were better.
My baseball career ended at about the age of 12. I realized that all these guys are way more serious about baseball than I ever was. Because to me, it was just, I was just out there to play. I was just having fun.
But, you know, you look back at, like, communities, and I remember when we still have the Washington baseball fields and softball fields. But I remember as a kid growing up, I mean, you know, you had, it was kind of those dog days of summer, and you know, kind of put your glove in your back of your pants or shorts, and yeah. And half the fun was going into baseball practice, and then we had the old city pool there with the high dive, and
that's right.
And then, like, the biggest thing that, like, frustration for me as a kid is they wouldn't let you swim on, like, a game day, and we just couldn't believe, oh man, we can't go swimming, we can't go to the pool if it's a game day, and
wow.
You know,
I didn't know that.
Then later in basketball season, you can't go skiing during the basketball season. But as a kid, it was big that you couldn't swim because apparently you would get tired or something and you couldn't play baseball.
I remember years ago, I was covering a major Division I college football team, and I had stopped at a local store. This wasn't in the area. It was out of this area, but I had stopped at a local store to pick something up. It was like one of those little drug stores with a candy shop, and the quarterback for that team pulls up on a scooter, a motorized scooter, like a motorcycle, and he comes ripping and, you know, kind of does some donuts and flips into a parking spot. And I said, and his name was Rick. I said, Rick, are you supposed to be on a scooter as a quarterback? And he goes, oh, heck no. If the coach knew about this, I'd be in so much trouble. And then he realized he was talking to the sports writer to cover the team. He's like, you won't say anything, will you? I said, no, Rick, your secret is safe with me. And fortunately, he never crashed that thing or anything, but dangerous. So the big story today, and there was a nice press release put out by Corey Klotz from the Washington City Police Department, and it's about that house in Washington City. And I don't want to give the exact address because I don't want people gee-gawking going by and eyeballing it. But some of the numbers from that house in Washington City, 27 people were living in this one house. And by the way, it's not like it was, you know, out somewhere out. I mean, this was right, I mean, what, like almost downtown.
Yeah.
27 people, most of which, not all, but most of which were illegal immigrants. There were three children. They had built on without building permits. They had dug down into the house in some areas. How does something like that even, first of all, when did you learn about all this? Same time as everybody else? Or
no, Chief had notified me prior. I mean, first and foremost, you know, we have zero tolerance for, you know, dangerous felons, which we're part of this group.
Yeah.
But when the manager and I were discussing it and we talked about the location of the house, you know, I knew right where it was, but it did seem to ramp up really quickly. Like, we kind of had an eye on the house just for other reasons. Mm-hmm. And then it ramped up. But what I'm really proud of with our PD is that as it ramped up, they were very proactive. And I can't tell you all of the approaches that they used in order to get warrants and to get evidence. But they did some very creative and strategic things to prepare for what happened, in the middle of the night before last, which was entirely appropriate in order to keep a community safe and really even to keep the individuals living there safe. So we made some tough decisions and obviously coordinated with ICE and our federal partners appropriately. So.
Yeah, the press release said Homeland Security, FBI, ICE, Washington City Police, of course. I mean, this was a big operation.
Yeah, it sure was. You know, it was interesting. I was talking with Councilman Belliston, you know, last night, and he's a pilot and likes to fly, and he said that one of his buddies was up early, and he saw the helicopter circling. You know, it was, you know, 4:30 in the morning. And there was no flight plan for it. So he knew something was going on, right? Yeah. They don't, you know, and obviously the helicopter surveillance is there in case, you know, one of the targets essentially tries to, you know, escape. They're able to keep eyes on those individuals. But the primary issue is when you have, you know, dangerous individuals, whether legal or illegal, we have a zero tolerance policy on that. And then certainly the other chips fall where they may with regard to, you know, immigration and, you know, residency, citizenship status.
Right.
And those things just need to be taken care of. So
I have heard the owner of the home is not a Washington resident. In fact, it's from out of the state, like Vegas maybe or something.
Yeah,
like
we're
that.
Hearing possibly Las Vegas, somewhere in Nevada. But, you know, I don't think he's free of culpability either. You know, there.
Because, yeah, it comes down to, did he know this many people were living there? And if he did, how much money was he getting from all of them? But also, if he didn't know, maybe it was the original renter who was renting out portions of the house. And at this point, that's something we got to figure out, huh?
Yeah, it's my, look, I don't have the exact details, but from what I've heard, I think he knew darn well what he was doing. Mm-hmm. And I think he was extorting these individuals for way more money than the living conditions were worth. He was, you know, he's kind of a slumlord, slumdog landlord, and making a ton of money on it. And as far as I'm concerned, Washington City will prosecute with any legal means possible for his role in aiding and abetting.
Is there anything that, you know, I mean, it happened, right? And, you know, my wife always likes to say, hey, this happened, get over, let's move on. It happened. But what about future? I mean, is there anything you can do to prevent something? I mean, we had 27 people in one house. We had felons in there. We had illegal immigrants in there. We had them building things that were not legal to build. We had them digging holes. I mean, is there anything you could do in the future to prevent this or?
No. So when you talk to Chief Williams and our PD, I mean, Washington, and I would say kind of this whole Dixie community is a very safe area. And, you know, we have a fairly young department. I mean, we were essentially established in 05. Today we have 39 officers. So we have ramped up policing in Washington City. We have a approach which we call community policing. And it's a philosophy where we really engage with the community, the schools, the community, including, you know, any, the rental community and those kind of things. But our department, our investigators, they are keenly aware of any areas that need to be watched. And so I'm really proud of the way that they watch this. And because, like I said, I knew where the house was. PD knew exactly where the house was. What we saw is we saw this ramping up and becoming unsafe. We did exactly what we needed to do in order to obtain the evidence, to get the warrants, to shut it down. So there's certainly a process that had to be gone through, and I'm really proud of our department and the way that they did that, because when you have dangerous individuals in a community, there's zero tolerance. But we have to follow the legal process in order to remove that risk.
Absolutely. All right, the mayor, I've got to get a commercial break, and I'm having a little bit of some stomach issues this morning. So I'm going to take a commercial break, and we'll have more on the show after this.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Yeah, that's right. Andy isn't normally here, but he had a little bit of a medical. He said, Dave, hey, come in and jump in for me. So this is Dave Hyatt in for Andy for the moment until Andy comes rolling back in. Got Chris Staley here from Washington City. Do I have your – check your mic there.
Check.
No, that's not you. What about that one?
Does that sound better?
That sounds better. Got to get used to the mics here. So I am a Washington City resident, by the way.
And we're neighbors of sorts.
That's right. So, got a lot of interesting stuff. Man, the area is just always growing.
Yeah.
Just houses going up. Every time I turn around, there's new stuff happening. How do you even stay on top of all
that? You know, the hardest part about that, Dave, is that anytime a new subdivision comes in, and especially if it's where there's been open space or farm fields, and I'm driving with my wife, she will elbow me right in the ribs and say, why did you let this happen? And I'm saying, I'm sorry, I don't own the land. You know, it's not, I didn't make any of the votes.
You know, I get all that. I get that all the time where people will be like, why did the city allow this? Like, how much do you have a say if something comes in? Like, if there's a business that wants to open up, can you totally just shut that down? Or is it?
So, you know, people think that the mayor is maybe has the most authority in town. And
yeah.
And sometimes I'm just feel like a glorified ambassador, right? but there are, you know, codified processes on the municipal level, similar to the state and federal level. And so property owners, businesses, individuals have rights. And the legislative body, which is my five council members, they're the voting body. You know, my job is to set the agenda, set the priorities, make sure that the budget is in line with those priorities. And so we kind of have different roles, but I'm happy to roll with it and take the blame and the credit, you know, as it needs to be divvied out of sorts.
Right. So what, like, let's say a pizza place wants to open up.
Yeah.
And they fit everything, like it's zoned right and everything's right. Like, you can't shut that down.
No, I mean, like, if there were a health department type issue, and really, from a city standpoint, we're just going to want a business license.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of the other, like, as far as just, like, health department and whatever you need to do to run a restaurant. But really, where we are now is, as Washington continues to kind of come into its own, we want that pizza place. I mean, I want that pizza place down by the new Whammers.
Yeah.
We have got a couple of spots open there. Or I want that pizza place down as the junction off Hayfield and Washington Fields Road down by Crimson Cliffs. I mean, we want to attract those types of businesses to bring those, you know, restaurant and retail services, especially in kind of those neighborhood or community offerings, closer to our residents, so we're not always having to go all the way into St. George for those things.
Yeah, and I would like you to go and get a Cane's near me.
Oh!
Raising Cane's, if you could get that done.
So I'm not going to lie, Dave. I have, like, researched on Cane's. From what I remember, they don't franchise, but I, you know what, I'm going to follow up on that because I'm going to reach back out to corporate and say, look, Exit 13, exit 12.
Oh,
I mean, it wouldn't be good for us because we'd be spending, you know, 12 bucks a meal on those fingers and fries, but Cane's would be awesome.
But it's funny you say, because I'll see people, or they'll say to me, like, well, why would they allow this business to come in? Like, we've already got too many of them. Like, I don't think that's the mayor's call. I don't think it's the city council's call. It's kind of like, if you fit the zoning and everything, like, that's all cool, right? You're not over there going, well, I'm not a big fan of this place. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
No, not in America. I mean, it's interesting, and I actually serve on the Washington County Water Conservancy District Board. And we were in a meeting the other day, and some of their staff was saying, you know, we respond to cities' demand for water. And I said, well, cities respond to property owners' and businesses' demands, right? And now we can kind of regulate and set some guidelines for best practices. But really, in America, it's that private sector economy. It's that capitalism. That's really what we want to facilitate. My job, if I'm doing it right, is getting rid of the red tape and facilitating the goods and services that the owners and the community wants.
That's awesome, because that's what I tell them. I'm like, this is America. You know that, right? Like, this isn't.
Last
you
time
you
I
don't
checked.
Think you're living in some other socialist country. Well, Andy's back. Andy, come save this thing, man. What are you throwing me to the good wolves?
Yeah, it was good while it lasted, Dave.
See you, Chris.
I'm actually really grateful that I have a boss like Dave who could bail me out in a situation. 6 years I've been doing this show, and that's the first time I've ever had to do that, Chris. I had to bail, man. I had an upset stomach and had to get out of here. So, but anyway, thanks, Dave. Dave Hyatt there. I don't know. You guys were talking about water, I guess, right?
No, we were mostly talking. Oh. What were we talking about? We were talking about commerce and a little bit of growth and,
uh-huh.
You know, where, you know, businesses come, you know, where they can come in or if they can come in and, you know, how much influence does the mayor have or does he not have in that process. But great guy. We realize that we don't live very far away from each other and that we've known each other for a while now. So.
I was going to say, have you ever met Dave before today?
Yeah. We've met kind of on a ecclesiastic level.
Okay, churchy. Yeah, well, Dave is very churchy. He wears that on his sleeve. He's very proud.
Yeah.
He's a very churchy guy. And although we are both pretty churchy, I suppose.
You know, I have to laugh. My youngest, we talked about a lot today when we were traveling.
So this is the last one, by the way. This is your baby.
Yeah, so we're going to be empty nesters. The three older are all up in Utah County. But she committed to BYU, you know, go to BYU, and that initially wasn't on her radar, and she felt like it was almost too churchy to use the term. And then we went and looked at the dorms where she'll be living, and again she kind of said, "Dad, this is really churchy. It feels like, you know, anyway."
No, I know.
I think she'll be fine. You know, she's But
the hardest thing, I went to BYU for a couple of years. The hardest thing was you are required to take a religion class every semester. And it's not like in high school, it's release time. You go out and it's a different thing. It's part of your curriculum. Those grades count.
And I heard the classes are tough.
And they're hard, yeah. I took one after my mission called, Book of Mormon for Returned Missionaries or something. We were breaking down, we'd spend 2 hours on one verse. And I was like, maybe I'm not in the right class here because, it was tough. So
she'll do great up there. And anyway,
empty nester. Now, how many kids do you have, Chris?
Four. Boy and three girls.
Okay. And the baby is 18. When does she leave town?
Yeah, so she'll start up there in August this fall.
Okay. And, so you have a summer with her. Although at 18, she's probably pretty preoccupied anyway.
Yeah, she's ready to go. You know, it's funny. She's been in the Chinese dual immersion program, the elementary school.
So she speaks a little Chinese?
She actually speaks very well. She passed the AP test as a sophomore. And so she's been taking 3,000 and 4,000 level Mandarin Chinese classes. One of her friends, a young man, opened his mission call the other night, and I asked her, I said, so where did he get called? And she said, he got called to the Japan Tokyo mission. Uh-huh. And I'm like, oh, crazy, because he speaks Mandarin. And he's like, no, he's assigned there, but Mandarin speaking in Japan.
Japan.
Kind of blew my mind.
Wow. I mean, you've heard of Spanish speaking in the United States, but I don't think I've ever heard Chinese speaking in Japan.
Well, and I've heard some of those Chinese, those Mandarin speaking in like Paris and Sydney and England and different places, mm-hmm. but I didn't think really like Tokyo, Japan. Who knew that there was enough of a Chinese speaking population that they would need missionaries that speak that language there?
And there is, back in the day, I don't know if it's still this way, but Chinese, Japanese, Koreans, they actually don't really like each other that much as far as there's a little bit of racial tension there. So that's interesting. There'll be a Chinese. And if you are around Asian, Eastern Asian people a lot, you can tell by the shape of their face what race they are. But us folks here in the middle of Utah, we don't know. Sorry about that. We were talking a little bit about the house, the raid on the house yesterday morning. I had heard 2:30, and then I had the press release said 4:30, but it was in the wee hours of the morning. We know that.
Yeah, so there was a process with serving the warrant and then actually with, essentially entering the home.
Yeah.
And so the official entering was at 4:30, but the ramp up started around 2 or 2:30, and it was kind of interesting to think, does this really happen in our own neighborhood, our own backyard? Yeah. And, and it did. And there was a lot, like I say, coordination with all those federal agencies that you mentioned. And again, we have a zero tolerance for dangerous individuals, legal or illegal. But as I couldn't help but just drive by the house the night before, because again, I'm all about following the law, and people need to be here legally. I don't waver on that. But there's always a human element to individuals, and I just couldn't help but drive by and I just looked in, and there were a few kids living there and a family that was legal here that's now displaced. And so there are real life human consequences for individuals' lives. Certainly the main target there, and the reason that we could, do what needed to be done, was because of those that were dangerous and needed to be taken off the streets or out of the community. But the others then, the appropriate action is taken there, and that has real-life consequences in their lives and families.
That house I don't recall it. I haven't seen it for maybe a week or two, but you drive by it a lot. I mean, it's right there on one of the main areas, and it didn't seem that big. 1,800, maybe 1,500 square feet.
1,700 square feet, somewhere in that range.
And there were 27 people.
Modular.
Yeah.
Sitting on top of like a basement, that's kind of a just basement.
The foundation.
Kind of.
Okay, yeah.
And some of the video image and pictures that I saw were that they came in and they just partitioned off all of the areas for just these tight rooms. And even to the point where you know, building code requires, you know, ability to safely exit a basement out of a window. But then when you're building on and partitioning walls in between windows, and it just became so unsafe too, that home will be condemned and boarded up, and the process of you know, taking care of that, you know, it will happen. But again, we can't tolerate that kind of thing happening in our community, and we won't, but we have to go through the right process.
Yeah, well said. Being condemned, what does that mean? Does that mean that it can never be lived in again? You have to, like, I don't know, burn it down or knock it down, or
something. I don't know exactly what condemned means, but I don't anticipate that home being livable again. I don't know what the legal process is. That's a conversation I can have with our city attorney, Thad Sigmiller. But I think condemned means we're done with that home.
Wow.
And then hopefully at some point, as things happen, it will turn over and something else will be built up there, and it will, you know. And I know that the neighbors are probably very relieved.
I was going to say, they're upset there's a condemned house in their neighborhood, but at the same time, there were 27 people living in that house, so they've got to be relieved.
Yeah, and I think they had been obviously complaining about a situation and had probably just resigned themselves to thinking that nothing's going to happen. Our complaints have fallen on deaf ears.
Mm.
But, you know, in a country that's ruled by law, we have to do it the right way. And sometimes that process takes time. And so, again, I can't thank my PD enough for the creative and consistent ways they were able to coordinate and just make this happen. And if there are other areas in my city, we'll do the same thing.
Nice. You were talking about your police department a little bit. You say 39 officers now?
Yeah, we've grown to...
Unbelievable.
It's a 28% increase since 2020. And we're a young department.
Yeah.
I mean, we're like 20 years old is all. From the time that we had some marshals and deputies over the years. And we had a part-time PD in the 90s. In fact, that's where the current Sheriff Nate Brooksby got his start.
That's right.
Yeah. Guys like Rulon Jones, mm-hmm. and Chad Pechtel. Rulon was a part-time chief. Then around 2000, we just weren't keeping up with kind of the front end of that exponential growth. We contracted with Washington County Sheriff, with Kirk Smith in the group.
Right.
And then the Sheriff's Department covered our area. In fact, once again, Sheriff Brooksby was on the Washington City beat.
Right.
So
saw him a lot, yeah.
Which is fitting. You know, he spent a lot of his youth living there and being in Washington, and now he's doing a great job at the county as well. But now we have this full-fledged, fully accredited by the Utah Police Chiefs Association department. You know, two lieutenants. We've got K-9. We've got SRO, school resource officers. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have a great culture where officers want to work, where, again, we have that community policing approach. And frankly, Andy, 80% of our general fund budget, which is like a combination of property tax and sales tax, goes to public safety, which is police and fire. And two-thirds of that 80% is police.
So one of the things that's happened in that field in recent years has been trying to keep officers, because so-and-so Ogden, you know, is offering 10,000 more a year or whatever. Do you find attrition a problem a little bit in Washington City, or have you been able to keep your guys?
Yeah, we've got a very steady core. I mean, take our current police chief, Jason Williams.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's been there since day one. You know, came up through the ranks and was promoted through. I look at Lieutenant Finona and Lieutenant Klotz that have moved up through the ranks. So we pay competitively. We're always checking that with our peers locally throughout the state.
Yeah.
That's kind of that sub-economy of municipal wages. But we pay competitively. I mean, certainly sometimes if an individual has an opportunity to better their situation or take a promotion, We wish them the best. I think of Sergeant Nash, who took a position with the state. It was a great promotion for him. We wished him the best.
Mm-hmm.
But then because of the culture, because of the support from the electeds and the staff in Washington, we always have just a full selection of individuals wanting to get on with Washington City PD. We have a lot of individuals moving from other agencies out of state into Washington. So it's a good mix of guys transferring with experience, but also those individuals just kind of coming right out of the academy and, you know, cutting their teeth and getting trained up. So, you know, couldn't be prouder of what we're doing there.
The police department, again, 39 officers strong now in Washington City. How about obviously the city has all some of the usual problems, you know, and is there a gang problem in Washington City? And how about the traffic? You know, everybody says, well, Green Springs and Telegraph might be one of the worst intersections in the history of southern Utah. Maybe talk about those two things, if you would.
Yeah. So, we do have a Southern Utah Gang Task Force. So okay. Collectively, from the St. George PD, the county, Washington has representation, Hurricane. So we're constantly, you know, monitoring, you know, the Mongols or whoever might be here. But again, with that proactive kind of preventative approach, we're staying on that. One of the things with gang activity is kind of, you know, it's not always kind of those biker gangs. I mean, that still can
That's
be
what
an
you
issue,
think of, yeah,
and
but,
we've
yeah.
seen that. But a lot of the issues are younger individuals that are using social media and are, you know, peddling drugs that look like candy and those different. So our PD, especially our investigators and those that are on that task force, the gang and drug task force, they have to be very smart. Sometimes they're undercover, and then really with some of like we have amazing youth here, but some of these youth just have no respect for authority and they're really brash. And so our PD just, collectively, law enforcement in Southern Utah has to be, you know, really engaged, and they work really hard on that. To the traffic question, you know, yeah, Green Spring and Telegraph, that intersection has been tough. That was maybe the primary driver when UDOT did that environmental study to add what's now our Main Street or Exit 12 interchange.
Right.
And that has offered significant relief.
It has, okay.
It's not perfect, but it has offered a significant relief. The other thing is that, you know, improvements along Buena Vista, that parallel road to the north of I-15 offers an alternative route to Telegraph. But, yeah, we have there's only so many east-west corridors throughout the county.
Yeah, we need another corridor too. If we can get that one done there.
You know, while we're on PD, one thing that's been on my mind lately is, I don't know if you saw the news.
You know what you can do? Tease this. Something's been on your mind lately.
On my mind.
And I'll get a commercial break.
Okay.
And then when we come back, you can tell us what it is, and we can sit there and wonder what's on the mayor's mind. We'll be right back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
I want to turn my mic up. I'm Andy Griffin. Chris Staley is here. He is the mayor of Washington City on Mayor Thursday. Some of you are saying, wait, I thought he was the second Thursday guy. He was. He's traded around and kids stuff. And I'm going to tell you, Chris, so we're talking a little bit about your daughter, and she's her last one, and you're about to go empty nester. My wife and I were a little apprehensive when our youngest was about to move out because we're like, it's going to be weird. It's going to be strange and kind of hard. And as it turns out, it's pretty awesome, man. No ball games, no dance recitals, no concerts. It's just the two of you, and you can, you know, there are literally nights now where we, you know, that we both get home from work and we have some dinner, and then we're like, well, what do you want to do? And neither one, we're not really anything, and it's nice. It's kind of nice sometimes. So, yes, you will miss all that stuff. And I tell my sons, you know, that I have kids now, I'm like, man, treasure these moments. I know when you're in the thick of them, they're really hard. You know, you're changing diapers and doing all
right.
But before you know it, it's all over. So treasure it.
Yeah. Don't blink.
But then treasure it when they're gone, too. Okay, you had something on your mind. You had teased this. You said, you know, I've been thinking about this.
Well, what is it? All of the discussion about, you know, police and, mm-hmm. and traffic and things like that just got me thinking to a conversation I've been having with my staff. And that is, and it was also prompted by, you know, a recent incident that occurred locally just outside of our city boundary. But there was an incident that involved, tragically, a 12-year-old individual driving a golf cart mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and a 7-year-old individual.
It was
on
a 9-year-old.
Scooter.
Yeah, nine-year-old passed away.
Passed away. And, that's been weighing on my mind because I recognize that, you know, for families with kids, that just seems fun. You know, you're going mm-hmm. out in your neighborhood, you're driving a golf cart, you're on those scooters, you're on those little electric bikes. It seems fun. Well, it's fun until something tragic like this happens. And there are two victims and many other families affected by this. And so I guess what's on my mind is, and again, when you mentioned traffic, is just that, you know, I've had the conversation with my staff that I've asked them to just enforce laws, specifically with underage and unlawful use of golf carts on city streets. And the officers have discretion on how to do that, but I'm asking them not necessarily to go target this and look it for it, but to not turn a blind eye to it.
Yeah.
And when it comes up in the course of their duties, to address it appropriately. And often addressing it appropriately means a conversation with the parents and potentially a citation to the parents if it's an underage operator of an illegal golf cart that doesn't meet the traffic laws for the roads. Right. And it's not that you'd want to cut out the fun, but the consequences of fatality and injuries, you know, rolling these, they're so serious that morally, I can't not talk to my department, that my police department, and tell them that we have to take this serious. We can't look the other way.
There are parents out there who say, hey, what's the big deal? Come on, my kid, it's a golf cart. How fast could it go? It's not a big deal. And what example you were talking about, a 12-year-old girl, we don't know. I mean, it was a scooter across an intersection. 12-year-old hit the kid. We don't know who was at fault. We don't know really many more details except that 12-year-old should not have been driving a golf cart. And everybody says, well, yeah, but it wasn't her fault. Maybe it wasn't her fault, but maybe if she had been a more experienced driver, she would have seen out of the corner of her eye that kid coming on this, or maybe she had, you know, coming up to an intersection, been extra cautious. Or, I mean, accidents happen all the time, Chris, but in this case, I'm not blaming the 12-year-old girl. I'm just saying she shouldn't have been driving that cart. Yeah. I agree with you 100%.
I mean, we have traffic laws for a reason. You know, when you turn 16, you can go through that process. You can get a driver's license. And it's a big responsibility that we all take. Mm-hmm. And there's a maturing and growing process that, again, I'm all about fun. I'm all about, you know, getting out. But when you see the reality of these real-life consequences, and again, this was like just a tragedy. Right. For everyone involved. Nobody was trying to or really foresaw this happening. I'm just saying that as a city leader, I have a duty to tell my PD to just enforce traffic laws appropriately. And if they're underage, illegal, unlawful use of motorized or electric vehicles on streets, that they need to use their discretion in handling it, whether by citation or warning or whatever is appropriate.
I agree with you. And by the way, and I'm not sure the exact law in Washington City. I know in St. George City, you cannot operate a golf cart in anywhere under the age of 16. If you're 16, even if you don't have a license, you can operate it if the speed limit is 35 or less in that neighborhood. It's one of those deals where nobody really wants to say it, but she should never have been driving that golf cart, period. It's just, you know, oh, it's just fine. It's fine. It shouldn't have happened. Yeah. It never should have happened.
Kids jumping on and off, you know, falling off. It's just, there's a lot of risk to it, and cars are much bigger and more protected than golf carts.
Okay, we got 3 minutes, and I got some texts here for you. People want to know things. Okay.
Speed round.
Could the cities of Washington and St. George work together to improve the intersection flow of Sandia and Merrill Mall Drive? The narrowing of Sandia past the LDS meeting, well, it's really long, but the gist is that. Right out there, I guess, when things there. I don't know. What, any thoughts on that?
I know there's a development, Paseo, south of Riverside Elementary going in, and Merrill will be widened in conjunction with that.
Okay.
Further than that, I couldn't comment right now.
Okay, next text. We went golfing at Green Springs. This is a nice one, although they did put the S on Springs, and I'm not sure if we're good. It is the most well-kept and maintained golf course we have ever played. The pro and superintendent are amazing in all caps. That's pretty cool. Huh?
Yeah, keep it coming. I couldn't agree more.
Somebody also said, can you ask the mayor if they might consider putting a stoplight at the intersection of Telegraph and 500 West?
Yeah,
when going into that shopping center, Home Depot, Walmart, it's so difficult to get out of there if you have to make a left-hand turn. You have to go to the sidewalk. If you're old like me, you just don't even try to turn left. You go right and go around the block.
So quick answer on that. It's on our radar. I read Shelley's notes from staff meeting last week. Blake, Public Works Director, brought that specific intersection up. So that's in the process of happening.
Okay. And that long text, they said, could you please have the mayor read the whole text, maybe off the air? Just don't have time to read the whole big long text, but we will get to it for sure. Mayor, first of all, great kudos to the golf course there in Green Spring. I golfed Green Spring Golf Course in 1995, I think it was, last time I was. I don't golf anymore, so. But I hear it's a great course.
Well, and we had some vandalism recently.
That's right.
I remember the hole, but it's a hole right down by Buena Vista Boulevard. Somebody just went in with a shovel and our guys went and used kind of the extra green where they used to cut out and replace like the holes.
Mm-hmm.
They did dozens and dozens and filled those holes and got it done
Amazing. Really
quickly and put it right back together. But proud of those guys. Technically Green Spring, but also Green Springs is appropriate because there's multiple springs.
There are more than one.
That are used to water that that golf course.
I don't know that debate will ever be settled completely.
Yeah, I'm not getting in the middle of it. Either way is fine.
Either one works, yeah. Mayor, all right, anything coming up in Washington City? We got about 30 seconds.
No, just summer fun. Independence Day, July 4th is coming up. That's always a great celebration. And then if you haven't been down to the George Washington Plaza to see the statue and the George Washington Standard and Mount Vernon Gate, go check that out. It's down by the Red Cliffs Temple.
He's Chris Staley, mayor of Washington City. Chris, as always, a pleasure. Thank you for coming on today.
Great morning.
And good luck. Don't run too much. You're making me tired just doing this. We'll be back tomorrow. Open lines. Thanks for listening, everybody.